Hey guys, welcome to the Brock Cannon Podcast. This is episode number 34. On this episode, I bring back Brian Paisley, who last time we talked about his journey from addiction to recovery and how ultra endurance sports, specifically through running, have really helped him on that journey. Well, the guy's been on a mission. He's been on a rampage ever since. He just finished the Tahoe 200-mile endurance run, which goes all around Lake Tahoe, obviously. And he talks specifically on this episode about how he actually enjoyed almost every minute of it. Now, that's not to say he didn't have pain, discomfort, hunger, fatigue, all that stuff. But in the 90 hours that were allotted to him to do this event, he genuinely enjoyed it. So the title of this episode is How to Run 200 Miles and Actually Enjoy It. But even if you're not a runner, you're going to get a lot out of this episode. The reason being is because we talk about mindfulness. We talk about how to be present in the situation. We talk about how to find beauty in all things and really on how you can be more powerful over your body through your mind. So there's something for everyone in this episode. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Brian's just an awesome dude and such a great energy to have around always. So without further ado, Brian Paisley. Hey guys, Brock Cannon here. Welcome back to the podcast. And today is super fun because I have one of the OG guests on the Brock Cannon podcast back again for the second time, Brian Paisley. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Brock. I really love your podcast. This is always an honor.
So good to have you back, man. You know, lots has been happening. We've been trying to connect and you've been busy yourself. You've been going the distance, literally, and recovering and everything else in between. So for those that are not familiar with you, Brian, and hopefully we'll have a lot of people that go back and listen to the first episode with you, because there was so much great content on that one as well. But tell our audience just a little bit more about you, kind of nuts and bolts, where you grew up, and professionally what you do, and then we'll move into all the other cool stuff I want to talk to you about.
Yeah, well, so I was raised in Marin County. So, you know, in those days, it was all hot tubs and peacock feathers. And as kids, we were out in nature all the time. It was great. It was kind of before the whole REI revolution happened. So it was like little stoner kids. We were always up in the woods doing stuff. You know, whether it be running or going down mountains, all that kind of stuff. And we started the mountain bike craze because we had little BMX bikes and we'd push them up Mount Tamalpais and then we'd ride down. And then after a while, these guys showed up with beach cruisers and somehow someone decided to meld the two. And then we got mountain biking, where you spent most of your life, right? Well, they say it was invented there. Who knows? Some people say Colorado. But yeah, I had a great, active childhood. And and then I did way too much school. I taught for a few years, and then I went into business. I was a landscape contractor for many years. And then I helped some other businesses, and now I'm mostly retired, and my wife has a store, so I work for her. So I would call it retired, but I guess I'm earning. So I'm not doing career stuff anymore. I'm not working in business. So I do have a little more time. So anybody listening on how to do a 200, as you get older, it takes more time to train. I mean, everybody knows that. You get older, you got to put in a little extra work than our younger friends. The one disclaimer is I do have more time than the average bear, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah. So I want to get into all of your training. And I mean, it's like, yeah. I got glimpses from between Strava and social media on kind of the days you did your long runs, and man, you were super consistent. So, I mean, first of all, let's back up. What in the hell inspired you to want to run 200 miles? I mean, most people listening would say, all right, I've heard of people running 100 miles. So
Is this just like double the insanity? Like what was the motivation for you?
Yeah, and it's some of us out there listening might all have had problems with hard drugs or heavy alcohol use. A lot of us get into this ultra sport, and just think of it. We love staying up all night and hallucinating. That's just who we are. No, but for the healthy people out there who've maintained a healthy, good athletic life, oh, it's fun. It's got a little bit of something for everyone. But why would I be attracted to that is, you know, we like to say in our group, you and I, Brock, we love to say do epic shit. And, you know, take that apart. I mean, epic is the key word. And we were just chatting before how you can't really have an epic time if it's all just good the whole time. Epic kind of requires a struggle. So there's something about, I think, the simplicity of the struggle of long distance running that just turns me on. It's like I've become more simple as I've gotten older, and it's these little chunk goals in training which leads up to bigger goals, and it's all very handleable for me. I guess in this complex society, I really love the simplicity of that aspect of my work and my life. It's almost like some kids who excel at math but don't do well in language. They love the fact that it's simple and there's rules that you follow. So I find a lot of respite, right, spiritually, just ability to let go when I'm doing it.
So to kind of back up on some of the events that you've done, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to remember how much we got into that on the first episode, but how long ago was your first ultra? How far was that one? And then kind of tell us the progression of up to this last 200 miler.
Well, there's a good story. Thanks for asking, because it was quick. It's been a very quick time. So I'm going to use my age. I'm 53 now. So I started running. I got clean off all the hard drugs and alcohol. I got clean 13 years ago. So if I go back to seven, so I was about 46. So 7 years ago, I actually started working on my body. I'd done all this spiritual work early in recovery, kind of getting my emotions together. And then I was like, well, it'd be a lot easier to do that work if I take care of, like, really kind of focus on my body as well. So it took me a while to start working on my body. So I'd say 7 years ago. And then my first half marathon trail race was probably about 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay. That isn't long ago at all.
No. And so once I did the half marathon, I did the Mount Tam trail race, which is actually happening this weekend. My wife's doing the half marathon. But it was on that half marathon, I looked and I was like, so where does the 50K go? Somebody was like, oh, it goes over there, it goes over there. And I was like, but wait a second, I want to do that too. Not because I want to prove I'm a badass or anything like that. I wanted to see what was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of how I come at it. I love being an athlete, and I do call myself that now just because, you know, it's a lot of hours I spend on working out. I forgot where I was going there.
So you wanted to see where that thing went, like from an exploratory standpoint.
Exactly. Thank you, Brock. I will go off a little bit because I didn't sleep. I paced overnight last week. So I love the athletic edge, but really it's that exploration, which does kind of mesh with the athletic edge of how far can you go and all that. But it's also just being able to cruise and tour. You know, I'm really a tourist. I just like to take things in a lot, you know, when I'm out there. Nothing feels better than having trained well enough that when you go out for your long run, you're not really thinking about your body or how this or that hurts. You're just kind of cruising. And I guess the distance, as I was increasing it, I found it just easier and easier to cruise for longer and longer. And for me, if I have lots of time in the woods, it just makes me happy. I mean, it's a great thing to do. And for us out here in the ultra community, we have the luxury to do it. And that's amazing. We have to be extremely grateful for that.
So it started with a half trail marathon. And then what was your next jump? Did you jump right into a 50K next? Or like, did you decide to do a marathon in between?
That's right. I did the 50K next, and I had fallen backwards into probably the hardest one in my area, because it has like 9,000 feet of climb in 30 miles. But I did it, and wow. I liked it. It got weird towards the end, because I hadn't, ever tested my mind like that. But I enjoyed it, and I got hooked. So it became a 50K thing, and for about a year, and then it became a 50-mile, and then it was like, let's try 100K, and then let's plan the first 100-miler. It just happened, bam, 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 like that. I probably sat on 50Ks for about a year before I wanted to venture forward. Yeah.
Gotcha. And where was your first 100-miler?
First 100-miler was just last spring in Utah. Is the Bryce Canyon.
Oh, Bryce was your first 100? I didn't know that.
That was my first 100, followed by a second 100, which was an attempt, followed by my first 200, all in the same season.
Oh my gosh.
And guess what? The 200 was perhaps the most just enjoyable, relaxing experience of them all.
All right, you realize you sound really disgusting saying that, but tell us more about that. So first of all, tell us why it was enjoyable, and for those that aren't familiar with where it was and everything and all the details, like, kind of fill us in on that as well.
Right. Well, the first 200 that I did was just this last September, and it's the Tahoe 200, put on by Destination Trail and Candace Burt as the RD. And it goes all the way around Lake Tahoe. But the Tahoe Rim Trail is about 175 miles. So Candace, when she lived up there, created this track. And so she added a lot of parts, some of them kind of sketchy. I mean, not sketchy, but, compared to the Tahoe Rim Trail, which gets so much use, it's so well groomed. So it is absolutely gorgeous because you're up in the mountains above the lake. And you're pretty much just going up and down peaks all the way around the lake. And I mean, there's nothing like, if you're a range person like me, it's not an out and back. It's not a bunch of loops. It's the big loop.
Yes.
I like it. I don't know what it is, Brock, with us, if it's primal or something, but some of us just like range and we like big loops.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it is gorgeous up there. It is gorgeous. And, it's a great time of year. Doesn't get too cold at night, probably mid-30s. So absolutely, I mean, it just couldn't have been better.
So what was your strategy going into this? Because yes. I know mentally there had to be quite a jump with that as well.
Yeah, I think most of my training, besides doing distance and being consistent, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, when people say they're training spiritually or they're training their minds during their training, that's a bunch of BS. Well, it's not. You don't want to substitute mental training for physical training, and they usually should happen together. But nonetheless, I knew there would be doldrums. I knew with 4 days or whatever it was for me, it was 90 hours. I knew there was going to be dark moments. So how am I going to deal with those? And I can also get into the nuts and bolts strategy in terms of how I paced myself, just knowing myself and knowing a good slow pace. But, mentally, mental preparedness was a big key, because I knew I would hit so many lows. So what was I going to do? What was going to be in my toolkit? And just as important as Leukotape for your blisters in your feet and stuff is a big, huge, gigantic bag of gratitude. You know, we go into the pain cave, but it's usually not an injury. It's usually just pain. Your feet hurt, let's say. You know, so what? It's pain. What hurts with pain is when I go into the ego, because pain, naturally, we're supposed to pay attention to ourselves, you know?
Right.
But if it's small and you've got to run 200 miles, you know, we always have little aches when we're running and this and that. But sometimes those can lead to a certain mental egotistical darkness, which I'm not saying egotistical in the negative sense at all. It's just the fact that it's centered on self. You're not really looking at the trees anymore. You're not. And the big bag that I took with me was just a big bag of gratitude, because every time stuff would come up, I would go into the gratitude, or I would say a prayer for somebody else, or I would sit down and just stop and look at the trees and try and just kind of let my thoughts wander and, you know, just relax. So I knew I would need certain mental tools, especially going from like doing my first 100 miler to then doing a 200. That those 100 milers, I'm sure people get lots of preparation for their first 200. For me, I was jumping in, you know?
Right.
So I knew there would be darkness, and I knew I had the ability, the positivity, and just the stubbornness to do it with pleasure. So I just, you know, just like doing my sit-ups, my push-ups, my weights, along with the speed work and everything else. On my long runs, when I felt pain, I had to practice a way to get out of that pain. And mental gratitude was big. Yeah.
So was that way out of that pain, was it always gratitude, or what were some other ways that you would pull yourself out of that pain?
Well, usually I kept myself out of that pain because I was in gratitude most of the time, or I would, like, it's almost preempting, right? We don't want to address it when it's an emergency. So I was just, when I'm up at a killer place, I said, you know, I said actually three prayers about three different friends. When I got down off the mountain, my phone dinged and I got two messages from two of the three people. So amazing stuff. Wow. But what I'm saying is, you know, take care of your spiritual self as you're going. So it could be prayer, it could be gratitude, it could be anything else. Once you go into the pain, it's much easier to access that. You're already in a habit of it. So I guess a lot of ultra runners that I've found that are, quote, successful, meaning they finish, they feel good about themselves, they feel good about their training, they all seem to have that access to something greater than themselves that can pull them through. Whether you call it, whether it's a Christian God, or whether it's your friends and your family or dead relatives or whatever it is that you hold on to. But it just seems that, you know, gratitude and love is a good characteristic of an ultra runner.
I love that. And I don't think that's talked about enough. So let me ask you a question, Brian. If you were in, we both live in beautiful places. You're in Northern California. I'm on the Central Coast. We're surrounded by beauty. We get to run in beautiful places. If and then this race obviously was in one of the most beautiful places. If you had had to have run 200 miles in, I don't know, the most desolate desert, or like, I don't know, whatever seemingly god-awful place one could think of, do you think it would have been more difficult? Did the beauty help? Do you feel like you would have just still been able to ground yourself with the mind?
I think it would have been a lot harder, that's for sure. When we say I think of Badwater or something like that, like just in the desert, I guess that has a lot of beauty though. But let's just say desolate. I just don't want to. But then again, you know, the whole mind trip of it might be interesting. You know, I'm always, you know, once again, I think we're a curious lot. And I'm curious about what that would be like. But then the first thing I thought of was, sure, is it going to be a good party?
Right. In other words, right.
Are there going to be lots of people hanging and cheering and fun runners? And sure, you know, I might not have the same experience. It's not like every experience is, you know, I'll probably go into it with different expectations. How's that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I find it so fascinating because, like, for me, growing up in Salt Lake City where there was beautiful mountains and now living here, like I think a lot of the enjoyment for me as well is being in beautiful places. So I really marvel and I have like this unbelievable admiration for guys like, you know, on the Prevail team, Jake Jackson, who's 24-hour worlds runner, but running around a track. Like to me, I don't know. I don't think I could do it. So it's like, you've got to, I guess, go to a place mentally where you, I guess, associate pleasure with what you're doing, because that to me just sounds like insanity, but people do it.
It does, because I think you and I, whether I think we could do it and do it with joy, but I think we, you know, it's like, well, why would I want to? And I think that's probably the biggest thing, is that some people's whys, they find something special and it's just not yours necessarily or mine necessarily. I'm not attracted to it, but once again, I don't know until I give it a try.
Right. And I guess I could see the other side as well. Like, well, if the majority of people do think that's torture, then maybe that's a great niche. If you want to be competitive.
So, I found it.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, no, anyway, so the 200 miles, actually, I want to back up and then I want to go to a few moments during the race. But walk us through leading up to that, your average training week. I know you had a super long run, typically, I think Monday or Tuesdays, but walk us through the rest of the week.
Yeah, so I usually work Wednesdays through, I mean, not tons of hours, but not enough to do any long runs because we got, you know, family and other things to take care of. But I work like usually Wednesdays through Sundays. So Monday and Tuesday are my day off. So definitely one of those days, and it's usually Monday that is my long run. But I got to do 30 miles this weekend, so I'm fine right now. So usually I'll take the whole day. I'll drive either a half hour out to Point Reyes, so it's super close, just a straight shot, or I'll go a whole like 45 minutes, almost an hour to Stinson Beach. And I've got long tracks, I've got shorter tracks, I've got so many tracks out there. But you know, so I only do that, go out west, you know, have to commute only once a week. So I'll sometimes go really early and get that long run out. And my long runs go from 25 to 50 miles. So I have a 50-mile track there that I like doing. It's great before 100, like during a peak week. Mm-hmm. And I usually go, I now have this pattern where before the 200, before my 100s and my 200, I'm now doing this night run that's a 50 plus miles. So for Tahoe 200, I actually did it up in the mountains to get up at elevation. But I've got tracks here that I can do that on. By tracks, I mean trails that like big. Yeah. So really nice big loops, no repetitive stuff, which is great for training because, you know, you got to be really disciplined to do a bunch of loops. So,
yeah.
So I do that. I have a long day. And then usually most of the normal weeks, I'll maybe pull out a bunch of 9 miles, a bunch of sevens. I usually have 2 rest days at least off of running. Usually I never, towards the middle of it, I don't take a day off from like, I'll continue the weights and all of that stuff. So I would say peak week, I really only did up to like 80 miles. I just didn't have the time for that much. I don't think anybody does. Who runs 100 miles to train for a 100 miler? Who runs 200 miles? So what do? We got to become strong in all ways. Sometimes people will do the back-to-back long runs. Those are great if you don't have enough time, but you have a weekend. So my peak was only about 80. A lot of people's peaks, it's like 60, you know, even for a 200. I've noticed the older folks, we tend to put on a few more miles in training. I don't know if that's really true, but it appears that we older folks like the time on our feet. Maybe it's just we have a little extra time. But that's so, and then the easier weeks, usually most times I'm hovering between 40 and 60 a week, regardless of training. So I'll get up a little higher as my peak weeks get closer.
And you mentioned sometimes you'll do speed work. What does that look like for you typically?
Oh, it's really easy and it's fun. And it's probably the best thing I added. And I started adding it really just last year when I started doing longer distances. And you're like, wow, well, don't you just need more time on your feet? And of course, you need lots of time on your feet, but a good way to burn a ton of calories. So for those of you who also want to lose weight, who are distance runners, because a lot of us can carry a lot of extra, are these sprint intervals. So strides, sprint interval, whatever you want to call them. And mine are real easy. I'm just here in a neighborhood. There's a little bit of incline, not much in this little neighborhood I'll do it in, but I'll do 30 seconds, just all out sprint, and then 30 seconds walk. And I'll do that for at least a half hour, and I'll get about 3 miles in that. But I can't stress how much that's helped. It's, first of all, it helped my form a lot. Because as ultra runner, and the longer we go, the more we'll kind of start heel striking, other things like that, which is fine. I mean, you're going a long way. You're more in a fast hike mode. But the actual speed helped me gain the form of a runner with higher knees, front foot landing and takeoffs. You just no time on those, you know, barely any time on the strike. So just that helped me get my weight a little forward, my knees a little higher, gave me more of that prototypical or typical form of a runner, you know, when you see a pro and they've got that perfect form. So it's kind of taught me that form besides giving me a really good workout on, you know, on the cardio. I mean, it's what do you call it? Aerobic, anaerobic. So that just, I don't know why it helps so much, but I always feel like I have a little extra push that I can do when I'm on a long run. Like I can be cruising and I know I've got it, you know, there's something about it. It's probably psychological. There may be something else going on, but I would say just about every coach for ultra runners just swears by it. David Roach, he loves to push speed work on his distance runners.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And I think you're right, you know, to be on a hill and to have the ability to kind of kick it into the other gear because you know you've practiced it. And
yes.
And to build that strength, I think it's super healthy.
I think as we train, you know, we just get like this anyway. And I just had a nice slow start at Tahoe 200. I was with a slower group and we were just chatting and did a little bit of running, but, you know, like 20 minute miles. And then after about 25 miles, I said bye. And it felt like I had so much energy from mile 25 to 100, I was doing great. I don't know what it was, but as soon as I got out of that group, it was like a little mini taper. I was just just ready to bust out. And I had this great section where I'm just like jumping on rocks and like freaking Spider-Man, you know, just killing it, having so much fun. And then, you know, having some nice rests and just keeping it going. And that was, I credit a lot of that to just having that tight rubber band in my back pocket, just ready to release.
I love it. So going back to the 200 miles, so you took the first 25 slow. Tell us about, because I think a lot of people that like literally can't even fathom that these things exist, they're wondering, do you sleep at all? If so, yes. When did you sleep? How do you eat? Like talk to us about that whole thing a little bit more.
Yeah, that's great. And why I even signed up for this beast was because I was interested in pacing it, and I had paced it the year before. So I kind of saw what happens before, because it's not an aid station every 5 miles. It's more like an aid station every 17, sometimes 20 plus miles. And at the pace you're going that kind of distance, those can be like, you know, it can be anywhere between 5 and 8 hours between an aid station. So,
right.
When you get there, you take off your pack, you sit down, you have a bite to eat. It's not a normal race. You actually relax. Most aid stations, I had myself in like, I'd say the average would be 45 minutes. Sometimes, you know, not including my sleep day, my two sleep nights. But so you really need to just sit down, have a full meal, and then you bring your whatever, if you like gel or your normal ultra snacky food, you bring that with you between the aid stations. But a lot of guys, you know, they'll pack a few sandwiches at the aid stations, you know, and after 10 miles, they'll take a break and have their own mini aid station, you know, and have a meal. So getting food in is extremely important, getting water in. That's why if you hit it really athletically and you don't pace yourself, if you're going race speed, you're going to burn, you know, you're just going to burn. It's just not going to last. You need to tempo, learn your tempo. So if some of these guys who are absolutely killing it out there, they're going, you know, probably 60% of their normal race speed, you know?
Wow.
So now when I had planned to sleep after 100K, so at mile 63, they had a sleep station at the aid station. Those are just sometimes if it's at a resort, you actually sleep inside on mats. And then the other ones, you actually sleep in tents. So I did not sleep there. I picked up my first pacer and I said, you know, I just really don't want to sleep. And so I just run through the night and I said, let's just go. So I picked up my pacer and we finished that first 100 miles, my first 100 miles. And that's when I got my first sleep, which was, I think, about 4 hours, which was great. Absolutely. Okay. So on these races, the clock never stops. They give you a lot of time. So they give you 100 hours to finish the race, which if you never stopped would be 2 miles an hour, right? So so they give you plenty of time, but a lot of people can't finish it because stuff comes up or, you know, you get burnt out. So you really got to pace it for the long haul. And if you do that, you know, you have plenty of time. So after 100 miles, I had a really good sleep at Heavenly Valley and then woke up the next morning and went until the wee hours of the next day. And then I slept again and that was pretty much it. Then it was get to the finish line. So I really never, I didn't hallucinate, which is weird because I usually hallucinate on a dime. I mean, I hallucinate, you know, just walking the dog. So I was really amazed by that. So my sleep and nutrition, everything was like on point in terms of keeping, you know, my chemical balances and my body right and all of that. And that's mostly from, I think, by only going whatever, 50% of my effort through the whole thing. I wouldn't have been able to make it at 80% of effort. I mean, if I was going 80% of my race effort, normal race effort, I wouldn't have made it. 50% was about right.
And how did you reel yourself in when you felt like you were going a little too fast? Were you using heart rate? Were you just trying to keep a certain pace based on your GPS watch? What were you doing?
Yeah, usually I try to stay on the fast parts. I try to stay no faster than 150 beats. But I don't really watch it that much. We can feel it, right? We kind of know when we're hitting a certain point. I think the super slow start really helped because when I took off, I would like run like a beast for like 3 miles, but then I would hike and relax and take stuff in. So I guess I just knew to hold back. And maybe the slow start kind of gave me that, like, it's okay. You know, it's okay. Chill out.
Yeah.
So I would say there was just a few sections. I probably really killed it maybe for a third of it, maybe 30 miles of it in sections is when I really hit it. But I just watch out is all I could say is just be careful. You know, it's easier for older guys to just chill out, you know. So if you're younger, you work on that, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's. You see it all the time. I mean, I'm 38 and I still feel like I struggle with it. It's just my old competitive nature from mountain bike racing. I want to go hard and fast, but I mean, you see it. Like, did you see the carnage of people that had pushed it in front of you and then you see them later like,
Well, yeah, definitely. I didn't see them go ahead, but I didn't. It was one of those things. It's not a brag because everybody passed me when I was asleep, but starting so slow was nice because all I did was pass people for the rest of the race. Because the people, like, you know, there were those who were just going to fit. So it was fun in that way, in the sense of, God, I'm doing so well. You know, it made me feel better. But I hate to make myself feel better on somebody else not feeling well. But seeing that, I was taking care of myself, right? You can't help say, I'm not putting this person down. I'm just saying, wow, I'm okay. You know? So, yeah, so it does help. And I think what it is, Brock, is when you do your, you know, your runs that I follow on Strava, it's just, you know, you're pretty darn fast, but it's like, you know, take certain sections and just kill it and then not, and then enjoy other sections. But when that GPS watch is on and the pace is clicking, it's really hard to hold back.
Seriously. It's almost like as much discipline to just kind of hold back, I think. Tell us, first of all, I want to get into kind of, for you, there's, I know, a deep correlation to some of these ultra races and your spirituality and kind of how that's evolved since you've been doing this. But first of all, tell us how you felt when you crossed that finish line. What, looking back now that you've kind of even had some time to digest it all, what did that mean to you?
Well, you know, the finish line, what it meant to me was I got to rejoin, I guess, the back into my life, right? That I had kind of gone away. I mean, even though it's definitely not like doing solo fast packing. I mean, it's very luxurious to have, you know, places to eat every 20 miles, but but it's still like you have been removed from society. You've gone through this kind of liminal in-between state and now you're back. So I guess there's the idea of commencement, of an ending, but also a new beginning. And I think whenever we have something that's truly awesome, some truly deeply spiritual experience, and we've separated ourselves from the normal life, and then we come back in, we're different. We can be slightly different people, you know?
Yeah.
You take all that with you. So there's all those memories. Now, when I was, I don't know, like 50 miles out, I was already mourning the end of the race. And I think it's good to do that. It's good not to just cherish the finish line. The finish line is a marker, and I think is very important for us to know that we are now back with the living, you know? Mm-hmm. And what are we going to take from what we did? We spent time, we spent a lot of money, we spent time away from our families. Who are, it's time to go back. And what did you learn, and how are you going to make the world, maybe a better place? You know, did you find a level of compassion like I did that's new? And I'm like, where's this? You know, and then how are you going to use that? How is that going to articulate in your work in the world? So I think the finish line, it's an achievement, it's an accomplishment, but there's also, there's a responsibility. And I think, like next year, I'm only doing two events, and one of them is absolutely huge. But, it's very selfish as a sport in a lot of ways, but also we learn things that make us better people. I know that, because there's no way I could meet so many people of a certain quality as I do in this community, in the ultra running community, of that high quality. So I feel, I guess, ambivalent about the finish line. It's having to come back, but it's also getting to take a shower.
Oh my gosh, I can imagine
how much I love. As people know, I'm kind of I don't look like one, but I'm a hippie. I'm kind of an anti-industrialist. I was trained as an anthropologist, so I look at how we live our lives, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Everything we do, it's a predator economy. Everything we buy, it's just so much waste, blah blah blah. And but I'll tell you, I'm the first one who loves electricity and Wi-Fi and a hot shower.
Without a doubt. And
keep my mouth shut. I could go on diatribes. I could have the manifesto according to Brian. And you know what? Like a good hot shower.
Oh, yeah. And I can only imagine, after being out there for that amount of hours, just like you said, pulling things from the experience to make you a better person. And hell, if anything, it probably gave you a new appreciation for the luxuries of life that we so often just take for granted, like a hot shower.
Of course, the well of gratitude we all have is just so huge, because just even the fact that, we have food, clothing, that we can worry about our run instead of worrying about my next meal. We are living, when we do this, it is a huge honor. And I don't think we can take it lightly when we take so much time out of our lives. I do think that if it's not making us better in a way, we might need to find something else to do, because it's a selfish sport, but it's not, I guess, in the sense that we give so much to each other in the running community, but we take a lot out of our lives. And so we do need to bring something back.
That's a really, really good discussion, I think, that should be talked about a little more, because I think, for the spouses and kids and people that support us ultra runners, I have no doubt that they have times where they're like, why is he doing this? Like, this is so selfish. He's gone all day. He's tired after. Maybe he's grumpy. Maybe not you, but yeah. I'm just talking about in general.
Yeah. No, general.
And it's like, I get it. Like, it, on one hand, it seems like we're these extremists, like we're selfish. Like, maybe in a way, for many of us, we traded one addiction for another. and it's like, the high of seeing how far we can push ourselves. So I think that's a very notable point to bring up, is for all of us to maybe go internal a little bit and ask ourselves that question. Well, if I'm going to have these experiences, which I think most ultra runners would admit, it's kind of part of who they are. Once they start doing it, they kind of become this person. But how are they going to then come back and serve the world? I think that's a beautiful question. So You mentioned compassion. Mm-hmm. You know, it's helped you with a new level of compassion. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like are some other areas that it's brought some awareness to with just your everyday life?
Right. And so, yeah, just a little bit about that, too, is the compassion part. Like, for instance, are you volunteering? What are you doing with this new found joy? Because I think it is. It's a way a lot of us find, we learn about joy, and joy being deep, happiness being kind of things that happen around you, joy being something that's bigger than you, but also in you. So what are we going to do with that joy and that compassion? And so a lot of us have to work like 80 hours a week. So there's very little other than, you know, bringing that to their daily interactions and stuff like that. Other of us who have time, you know, will be volunteering or doing something else, giving back in a certain way. But I do want to say that this whole thing that we do, it's great and it's really good for our bodies, but we learn things that we need to bring back to the world. It's just like what do you call it? It's like a rite of passage, like these little races too. I sometimes look at it as a rite of passage. There's who I was before and kind of who I am after. And every race does that a little tiny bit. Who did I think of? Who, why am I doing this? And so that's, I guess, the big question. And that's what a lot of coaches always will ask. And I've started asking, even though would never profess to be a coach, is I always ask people to say, so why are you doing it? And, you know, sometimes it's just because, or they haven't really thought of it, but I'm like, think about it, you know, it'll help you finish. It really will.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, and it can be for many different reasons. I think the deeper reasons are the ones I use, just because I guess I'm kind of a deep dude. But so I use deep reasons. I run for a mutual organization that you and I share. That's Depression to Extinction. That's Depression to Extinction. And, and I raised money for two of the races or three of the races I did this year. And that little added thing can help a lot. And guess what? All I'm doing is saying, here, I'm working with these people. These people do this. If you have a couple dollars, that's great. You know, and anything helps. And so when I do that, and then I add a little bit to that kitty too, it doesn't mean I have to finish the race. It just reminds me that I get to do this fun stuff. I have to do something for somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give back to what we were so freely given.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yes. Yeah. So for those looking out at those 200s or love to do the miles, I mean, big time. The number one thing I can say is you can definitely do it. And like any distance, the more training you can do, perhaps the more fun you'll have, because your mind will be in other places other than your sore feet and stuff. But you'll always have an epic time. I mean, I saw a lot of untrained people this weekend finishing 100 or their first 100, and they did great, and they were smiling and having a great time. But it's all doable. A little bit of planning and a lot of help. My crew is just amazing. My pacers just putting up with me, my jokes, my farts. it's just, you know, there's nothing like it. And just great deep talks. One of the things I did want to say about the community too, that's a very positive thing, that kind of, once again, I hear stuff from my wife, because what she sees from the outside, and she says, you know, you guys are such a kudos culture. It's not really real. You know, you're just kind of giving each other high fives, which is great. Makes you all feel good. But is that, you know, what about your, you know, is it, can you have deeper relationships? I'm like, you need to run a long distance with somebody by your side. It gets deep way too quick. and I've made friends who I stay in touch with, who I talk about their issues with, you know, from the trail. So it's it is a kudos culture. It is, yay, everybody's great, you know. But deep stuff is happening and deep talks are happening and healing is happening. And then people are also doing trail work and they're running for different organizations and stuff like that. Or they're helping kids or dogs in the pound get out for walks and runs. You know, we do all types of great stuff. So we're good people.
Yeah, I would agree there. There's so much good that's happening, and you're exactly right. I mean, stuff definitely, the bonds that you create with people that you're spending that time with, I mean, can last a lifetime. I definitely know I confide in some of my running friends in a big, big way. I can talk about stuff that I can't talk about with anyone else. So, well, Brian, this is fantastic. I think I've had so many takeaways here. I think this main one is how can we use these experiences to make the world a better place? How can we bring back our gifts? This whole approach of gratitude as the fuel almost to get you through these things, I think, is enormous. You've made me reflect on that in a huge way. Yeah. And when I get impatient, because I do get the urge to just go fast and get it done sometimes, I think you've given some amazing perspective. So I appreciate having you on, man. What is your... Tell us these two big events this next year that you have on the books real quick. Give us a tease.
I'll give it to you real quickly. And also, if anybody wants to reach out to me via Facebook, I'm not that active on other social media, but if you have any questions, go ahead, friend me or message me, Brian with a Y, Paisley. So next year... February 7th is my next race, or 8th, whatever. It's a Friday, Saturday up in Washington in the Puget Sound. So think wet, think cold, think perhaps lots of snow. And this Orcas Island is not that large. So the trail is 25 miles, but we do it four times. And I'm not a loop person, but seeing that I've done the whole island and there's nowhere else for me to run, I think I won't mind going four times around it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's beautiful too.
Like, it's over there. What's over there?
Right.
So it'll be fun. So I'm just starting my training for that. I'm just starting to get my gears together here. And then I have what's called the California Untamed. It's a brand new race. So I'm just praying that Ryan Spitz, who's putting it on, I'm praying for him to do a good job for me, but also for himself. It's a huge undertaking. It's 330 miles from the coast of Northern California up to Mount Shasta. It's going to be quite a bit of road. There'll be like, I don't know, almost 30% road. So that's like when you take it apart, it's 100 miles. You know, you might be thinking shoe change for that. You might be thinking some other stuff. Then there's a lot of double track, so Forest Service Road, and so it's kind of a third, and then like a third of single track. But I'm interested, once again, to go further distance. I think one of the main things was I looked at it, and I said, yeah, I kind of wanted to be out there a few more days, and I said, well, then this is perfect. he gives like 200 hours to finish it, so you have lots and lots of time in case something goes wrong. They'll have sleep stations, they'll have food, they'll take care of you. So once again, it's kind of luxurious. It's like fast packing for 7 days, but not having to carry your food or big shelter or anything. So that's just going to be epic. And I'm really looking forward to it. And I can't wait to share everything about it with y'all.
Well, we'll have a link to the race. And I just pulled up the website here. Look who's on the front page.
Oh, me?
Yeah, although they spelled your name wrong. I'm going to have to write it.
I know. Ryan, if you hear this, go back and change that.
You know, my dad's middle name is Brian, and he spells it the same way. So I always remember that.
Oh,
well,
good.
This looks amazing, my friend. Maybe I'll come up and harass you for some of this.
Please do.
Just the road parts.
Yeah, right. Please do, but you know, I really want, so anybody out there, I'm gonna have like crew shifts, so you don't have to be up there the whole time. It'll be like, go up there, I'll hopefully have a rented RV, so then people can, like a big camper van, and that you can go up there, and then that crew can give you the camper van and they can cruise along. So anybody wants to help, boy, it's going to be fun. And I only need help like at night, like once a night. So it's a vacation idea that's also fun.
This sounds awesome. Well, my girlfriend's really into all the mystic stuff with Mount Shasta. So we'll see if I can twist her arm. We'll go up and do a little bit of hippie stuff and a little bit of running.
Yeah, well, they go together really well, actually.
This is awesome. All right, you guys. Well, for those that want to get in touch with Brian, we'll have links to all his social media. If you want to just laugh your ass off at his jokes and memes all day, I highly recommend his Facebook page, because that's literally what's happening for me all day when I see him on there. I don't know where you find that stuff, man.
I don't know either.
It's pretty awesome. Oh, I don't even know if I should repeat the one from this morning that I saw.
No, that one's I thought twice, because usually I don't do like heavily political stuff, or unless just really just fun satire or sexy kind of stuff. I try to stay away from that.
I don't know how you couldn't not post. I mean, I died. I like was laughing out loud for 5 minutes. So it's always a gift, like just to see your stuff, man, and appreciate your amazing attitude and all you do for this community. And thanks again, man. We'll have you back on after this, one of these adventures this next year. It'll be fun.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Brock. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Hey guys, one more thing before you go. Brock here. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please go ahead and subscribe to it. You'll get weekly updates on whatever platform you most enjoy it on, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or a host of others. Secondly, what was your favorite part about this episode? Mine was when Brian said the only thing that he really took out on that race course was a big bag of gratitude. How cool would it be if each of us could take a big bag of gratitude with us wherever we went, whether that was to work, whether just spending time with our spouse or significant other, or in the mountains if we're trying to go through something really extreme like Brian did. Take a big bag of gratitude wherever you go. That was the biggest takeaway that I had. Would love to hear your guys' comments and feedback. And if you're enjoying this, feel free to share it. I know there's a million podcasts out there, so your time and attention on listening to this little podcast means a lot. So thanks so much, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.